I'm John Moe. This week on Wits, actor Cary Elwes. He starred as the dashing hero in the movie classic The Princess Bride, and he shares stories from the making of that film, including being lured into an ATV by Andre the Giant.
Hey, boss.
I go, yes, Andre. I know. You want me to try the toy.
You know you want to.
That ATV quickly led to a dashing hero being unable to walk.
And I hear it snap like that. Just like that. Really, like, perfect. Oh, great. I just broke a toe.
Plus, singer Kat Edmondson, who grew up thinking that life could be just like a musical.
When you went somewhere and something happened, you'd start to sing about it, you know. And then somebody would be walking by and they would join in.
Whoa, oh, never mind the weather. Whoa, as long as we're together, you say.
All on Wits, coming right up. From APM, American Public Media, this is Wits. I'm John Moe. This week, we come to you from the historic Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul with singer Kat Edmondson. We'll hear some delightful music from Kat in just a bit. First, actor Cary Elwes. He's been in movies like Robin Hood, Men in Tights, Twister, Saw, lots and lots of movies. But he's probably best known for his role as Wesley in the movie The Princess Bride. Cary Elwes has written a book about all the fun that he had making that movie and some of the challenges as well. The book is called As You Wish, Inconceivable Tales from the Making of The Princess Bride. I asked him to begin by saying the three words we all wanted to hear.
As you wish. There you go.
All right.
It took the publishers all of 2 seconds to come up with the title of the book.
And when the movie came out, it did okay at the box office, didn't do huge, but then it had this slow build on video to becoming a classic.
Yeah, well, it was the film came out and we opened the same weekend as Fatal Attraction, which is, because clearly that's the same audience that we're getting. But people were kind of put off by the title. You know, adults thought it was a kid's movie. Boys thought it was a girly film. And no one understood what it was. And it sort of, you know, it was actually university students who really got it, believe it or not. And then it went away. We were all a bit depressed by that. And then there was the invention of this wonderful new format called the VHS. And then people started buying it and renting it and giving it as gifts to family and friends. And I remember I was in a restaurant in Manhattan about 10 years after it came out, and the waitress, very nice waitress, was asking me how I wanted my hamburger cooked, and I said, medium rare, please, and she goes, as you wish. And I said, and you know, I was very British, I went, excuse me. She winked at me and went, you know.
On an average day walking down the street, how often do you hear As You Wish?
It's crazy. You know, I don't get as bad as Wally Shawn. Wally Shawn says that if he drops his keys, somebody goes, inconceivable!
And if he ever tries to start a land war in Asia,
that
comes up as well.
Forget it.
There's so many stories in the book, so many stories it sounds like you went through making this movie. You had a big accident. You injured yourself on the set of the movie. What happened there?
Okay, so a lot of the film was shot on a soundstage, but the second half of the movie, we went out and shot in the countryside in Derbyshire in a place called the Peak District. And it's very well named because it's very hilly and very mountainous. And Rob Reiner, the director, wanted to shoot, you know, all the scenes with Buttercup and Wesley running in and out of the fire swamp from the top of these hills so he could get the full vista and the full view of this lovely countryside, right? And Andre, God bless Andre the Giant. Yes! Let's hear an applause for Andre. Andre, the eighth wonder of the world.
7 foot...
Seven foot four, 450 pounds of pure heart. You know, you had to be standing in front of you blocking the sun or shaking your hand and making you feel like your hand was a five-month-old baby. It was extraordinary. But he had the biggest heart, and what's so funny is he called everybody boss. And that's ridiculous when everyone had to talk to him looking up at him like that. So the production manager realized that Andre couldn't fit in any of the vans or trucks that we were using to get up onto these hills to shoot, right? And so he went up to Andre and he said, Andre, how'd you get around in your farm back in North Carolina? And Andre goes,
I use an ATV, boss.
And, you know, back in 1986 in England, all-terrain vehicles weren't that popular, you know? But if you get out your smartphones and Google Andre and all-terrain vehicle, you'll see a very happy, smiling Andre the Giant on what looks like a tricycle. The little three-wheeler. And you've never, I mean, he was a happy guy anyway to begin with. He was zooming around on the set on this thing all day long. And to see a 450-pound guy move that fast was quite extraordinary. And, you know. And he thought it would be fun to taunt me, you see. And I was rehearsing the scene. I was going to shoot the scene with Buttercup where I confront her for having, you know, married Humperdinck. And then we fall down the hill and I say those three words. And he came up to me on this old train, a big thing, big, loud thing. And he come up to me and go,
"Hey, boss."
I go, "Hey, Andre.
You like my toy?"
I said, "Oh, it looks a lot of fun, Andre."
"It is fun. You want to try it?"
I go, "No, I don't. And you just take off again. Day two.
"Hey, boss. You want to try my toy?"
I don't think so, Andre. It's an insurance. This went on for 4 days. Finally, he came up to me and he goes,
"Hey, boss."
I go, "Yes, Andre. I know. You want me to try the toy."
"You know you want to."
Now, I'm the only person who says no to a, you know, 4 days in a row to a 700 or 540-pound guy. And, or 450-pound guy. It's the same when you're standing in front of him. I promise you, it's the same thing. Okay? And so finally, I relented. I went, "Oh, all right, Andre." You know, and here I am in my full outfit as the man in black. I thought taking the mask off was a good idea. And that was get good peripheral vision, at least. And his bodyguard. He had a bodyguard. How hilarious. I said to this guy, I said, "What are you guarding him from, the flu?" Easiest job in the world, this guy. Comes up to me and he goes, "Oh, I should give you a lesson on this thing." And Andre gets off it, by the way, and it goes up another 5 feet. He goes, "Oh, it's just like a motorbike, governor. Clutch here, brake pedal, on-off switch, Bob's your uncle. That should have told me something." I had no business getting on this thing. And I get on it, and I'm thinking I'm very cool, right? And it's shaking and everything. I put the thing in first gear, and I go over a rock and catch my big left toe between the clutch pedal and the rock. And I hear it snap like that, just like that. Really, like, perfect. I went, "Oh, great. I just broke a toe." Now there are crew members running up, right, because they're concerned. And Rob Reiner had told Mandy and I that we had to do all the sword fighting scenes ourselves, that we had no stunt doubles. So I'm sweating at this point, thinking, "Oh my gosh, we're 2 weeks into filming. We haven't shot the sword fight scene. I'm going to be fired. That's it. I mean, Rob's going to say,
well, you broke your toe. It's over."
I'm thinking that's it, right?
Got to do it left-handed and right-handed.
Right, and how am I going to do that limping? I could barely get off the all-terrain vehicle. So now they're running up to me, and I'm trying to be like the Black Knight in Monty Python Holy Grail. I'm like, no, it's nothing. It's just a flesh wound. It's nothing. Nothing. It's fine. And the set nurse comes up to me. It's hilarious. Set nurse comes up, and she's got a bag with her, right? And she goes, "Ooh, what happened to you then?" I said, "Oh, I don't know. I think I may have sprained a toe." "Oh, let's have a look at it." So they take my boot off very tenderly, right? And then they take the sock off, and there's my toe, and it's all swollen in the wrong direction. Everything's great. And she looks at it, and she goes, "Can I touch it?" I go, "I wouldn't recommend that." She touches it, and I'm like, just going like that. And she goes, "I think it's broken. I mean, look at it. It's pointed in the wrong direction." I said, no, it's just a sprain. She goes, "No, it's broken." So I said, "What can you do?" I'm panicked at this point. I'm sweating. I said, "What can you do?" She goes, "I'm a set nurse. All I've got in my bag is something for an upset tummy, something for a headache. I don't have nothing for broken limbs. Got to go to the hospital for that. I'm not a doctor." I said, "But what can you do? I got to shoot the scene. What am I going to do?" She said, "Well, I suppose we could make a makeshift splint." I said, great, let's do that. So she grabs like a couple of twigs or something and bends the toe back into the position, tapes it to the other toe, right? Now the boot won't fit. Oh, great, they have to cut a hole in the boot. And now I'm thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to say to Rob Reiner? And I thought, I'll just brazen it out. I'll pretend, I'll just put all the weight on that foot and just see if I can just get through it all, right? Like a twit. And we get in the van to go up to the set, get to the set, open the door, get out, and there's Rob. And he sees me and he goes, "Hey, Gary, how you doing?" Just like that. And I go, "Fine, Rob, how are you?" He goes, "No, how you doing?" Like that. And I knew instantly that he knew, right? So I said, "Rob, I'm so sorry. I feel like such a twit. I was fooling around on Andre's all-terrain vehicle, and I went over a rock, and I think I may have broken my toe." He goes, "You think I don't know? I'm the director. Everybody's talking to me, saying Carrie's foot is broken. He can't walk too good." So I said, "I'm so sorry, Rob. I should have told you. I feel so stupid." He goes, "Don't worry about it. Can you walk?" I go, "Well, I'm, you know, it's pretty interesting. You know, so I can limp a bit." He goes, "Can you run?" I go, "That will be interpretive." But he was a mensch about it, and he said, "Look, the sword fight scene is not till the end of the movie. We'll work around it if we have to." And he was a total gent about it. And the lesson learned is, for me, always was always tell the truth, it's easier. And then B, don't go fooling around an all-terrain vehicle if you don't know what you're doing. Them things are not toys.
An amazing movie, a wonderful book also. Carrie Elwes, everybody.
Thank you.
She is a singer and songwriter who has released 3 acclaimed albums. The most recent of which is The Big Picture. Please welcome Kat Edmondson.
You string me along. My friends say it's wrong. They tell me I'm crazy. Asking the stars, the outlook is hazy. Whoa, oh, never mind the weather. Whoa, as long as we're together, you say. Why do you run away and save me for a rainy day? I'm tired of the fight. I turn out my light. You know I'm not sleeping. I'm walking the line. I just need a sign. You call me a weeping. Whoa, oh, never mind the weather. Whoa, as long as we're together, you say. Why do you run away and save me for a rainy day? Say yes, I can't say no, and that makes me crazy. You never say stay, I never can go away from you, baby. Whoa, oh, never mind the weather. Whoa, as long as we're together, you say. No one ever loved you. No one ever loved you. No one ever loved you. Not the way that I do. Ooh. Oh, no one ever loved you like I do.
Kat Edmondson with John Munson and The Witnesses. More with Kat Edmondson and actor Carrie Elwes in just a moment. This is Wits. I'm John Moe. Wits is proud to be part of the Infinite Guest Podcast Network, along with a lot of other great podcasts, such as You Must Remember This. That's a show that tells the lost and forgotten stories of Hollywood's first century. Right now, host Karina Longworth is exploring the story of Charles Manson and his role in one of the most tumultuous times in Hollywood history. Don't miss this season of You Must Remember This. Search for it on your podcast app or go to infiniteguest.org. This is Wits. I'm John Moe. This week's show features singer Kat Edmondson and actor and author Cary Elwes. His recent book is titled As You Wish, Inconceivable Tales from the Making of the Princess Bride. And he told us more behind-the-scenes stories about filming that movie, including this one about Billy Crystal, who played Miracle Max.
Billy and Carol Kane arrived in the first couple of weeks of October, and they had only three days shooting on the film. And when I heard that he was arriving, I was so excited because I knew his work from Soap and Saturday Night Live. And I went to go watch him get made up in the makeup trailer. And he brought his makeup artist from Saturday Night Live, a guy called Peter Montagna. And he had two pictures on the mirror. One of Casey Stengel, the Yankees manager, and the other of his grandmother. And he said, that's what I want him to look like.
Those together.
Those two together. And sure enough, you know, I watched Peter put this latex on him and then these massive eyebrows. They were so large that his feet would never get wet in the rain. And and this wig, and cataracts. And as he was getting made up, he started getting into character. And by the time he was finished, it was wonderful watching this transformation. By the time he was done, he was fully immersed as Miracle. And he stayed in character as Miracle Max. He even went to the commissary, which is the dining room on the set. And he went in line. It's just like a school, high school cafeteria. And he took his tray, and he asked the lady behind the counter, he goes, your shepherd's pie, is it spicy? And she goes, I don't think so, sir. And he goes, you don't know my colon. And this is how he was all day.
That's when it wasn't being filmed.
No, this was off camera. And so finally, we get to the scene, and I'm thinking, what an easy day. Here I am, lying on the slab, mostly dead. I have two lines. I say, true love. And we do a rehearsal, and Rob comes up to me, and he says, hey, Gary, I just looked in the monitor, and I can see your chest moving when you're breathing, so you're going to have to stop breathing during the day. I said, how long for? Don't worry, we're not gonna kill you. It's a great note from a director, you know? So I stopped breathing for the take, and suddenly he walks over to Billy, and he whispered something in his ear, and I didn't find out till later on what he whispered in his ear, but he whispered this. He went, just go for it. Not that Billy needed much prodding, right? And as Rob yelled action, Billy launched into, you know, 3 hours of medieval Yiddish stand-up. I mean, it was just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Some of it was so blue, I can't repeat it here. I mean, stuff involving sheep and Vikings. It was crazy. Absolutely crazy. And the first... Now, Rob Reiner has a very boisterous laugh. It's very high-pitched, and it's loud. You can hear it in Detroit. And the sound guy came up to him and went, sorry, governor, you're ruining the tape. You'll have to step off the sound stage. And he goes, but I'm the director. How can I direct from in the hallway? So they set up a monitor for him in the hallway.
The hallway to direct
that scene from the hallway. Now, here am I trying not to breathe while Billy's doing Yiddish stand-up in front of me. And I was the next one to go. They said, you've got to go too, Mr. L, we're sorry. So I joined Rob in the hallway. They replaced me with my rubber dummy, the one that Andre's carrying around. And Mandy told me, I bruised a rib trying to hold it. I didn't know you could do that. He said, I bruised a rib trying to hold in my laugh. That's how painful it was. So the only injury he got on the movie. So, crazy.
Everybody's getting injured in all sorts of different ways.
Yeah.
Cary Elwes, everybody. Support for Wits provided by Dinner. The biggest meal of the day, right when you need it least. And by disgraced FIFA president Sepp Blatter, who apologizes for ruining the name Sepp. And bladder. And by septic bladders, a painful urological disease that is still cleaner than Sepp Blatter. Here with more music, Cat Edmondson.
Oh, my love, how can I show my love? It's not enough just to kiss you. Oh, it's not enough to hold you in my arms. No, it's not enough to
Cat Edmondson, John Munson and the Witnesses. Cat Edmondson, welcome to Wits.
So glad to be here. Thank you.
The latest album is The Big Picture, and it has a photo of you with a movie camera on the front. And I understand that classic movies are a big influence on your work. It's kind of how you got started with music?
Yes. When I was a little girl, I had a single mom. And she was working a lot, taking care of us. And she would try and preoccupy me with old movies. And so she would pop in one of those VHS tapes that Carrie was telling us about. And I grew to love so many old films, and I actually started learning music through those films.
What were some of those films?
Some Like It Hot, Bringing Up Baby, Singing in the Rain, Springtime in the Rockies? No?
You were on a roll there for a while.
That's a Betty Grable movie with Carmen Miranda, and it's worth checking out.
So you weren't watching like Sesame Street or these other things that...
Oh,
the other
sure, I was watching those too.
But this is what was standing out to you. This is what was making an impression.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because as I got a little older, I'd have my friends come over and play, and they really had no patience for the types of films that I was watching. Not only could they not understand what they were saying, they were in black and white, which was entirely boring to
yeah.
them. And the songs were irrelevant.
What are some of the songs you remember, like from those early films?
I Can't Give You Anything But Love, I Want to Be Loved by You.
Do you still watch those movies today?
Yes.
Yeah. What are some of the ones you keep coming back to?
Oh, lately it's been Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers because I've been tap dancing.
You've been tap dancing?
Yes.
How's that going? What, wait, let's start with why. Why are you tap dancing?
Why not? Actually, it's something that I've always wanted to do since I started watching those movies because, well, let's go back. When I started watching these films, I actually thought that this is what it was like to become an adult, that eventually I would enter into this world where when you went somewhere and something happened, you'd start to sing about it, you know. And then somebody would be walking by and they would join in. And then it'd be this big number and everybody would be friends afterwards. And then you'd all happen to see each other at the supper club that night drinking champagne. And then maybe you would get up on stage and sing and then you would tap.
So you have to
And
complete.
So I had to have tap in my arsenal, and it was on my list of things to do, and I realized I hadn't gotten to it last year, so I started taking classes.
I just really desperately want to live in that world you described.
Oh, sometimes it's a lonely world.
I suppose it is. I suppose it is. You grew up in Texas, and you lived there quite a while. You lived in Austin for some time. I don't hear any, like, country or Western sound in your music. Why not?
I just never thought it was necessary. Sometimes I do refer to my roots, and it's... often quite novel, but, and in fact, I recorded a song, Long Way Home, with Lyle Lovett, and it's arguably Western swing. But I was more fascinated with a different style.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. And now you live in New York. How has life in that city and living there changed your music?
It's only made it more indulgent, more romantic, more spectacular and glittering. And again, I sound like a big geek now, but in all of those films, they were running in and out of these big, beautiful Art Deco buildings, which I walk by all the time, so I start to sing about it.
Kat Edmondson, everybody.
Thank you.
Folks, we have all come to know YouTube comments as the ugliest place in the world, where nasty jerks complain endlessly. I recently found out that nasty jerk comments aren't a new thing at all, because I've been reading through pages and pages of movie fan magazines from the 19-teens, 20s, and early 30s. I found that people who write letters to the editors of these magazines can be just as mean as anybody on YouTube, although often they are tremendously more eloquent and thus more entertaining. Often, too, these letters are written with home addresses printed at the bottom of them, which makes them a lot different from YouTube, where you hide behind an internet name. Here, if you didn't like what someone had said, you could drive to their house and confront them about it. This is old-timey movie magazine Letters to the Editor Theater.
you a nice, unoccupied pedestal in your hall of infamy, then please dust it off and prepare it for a new tenant, Mary Pickford. I do not like Mary Pickford, an antipathy to her that I can hardly explain myself. The Pickford fans will think me mad. Maybe I am, but them's my sentiments, and I hardly expect to deny them. Madge T-Bomb, 715 West 172nd Street, New York City.
It seems to me that there is something pathetically lacking in anyone who admits a positive dislike for Mary Pickford. To me, that is like saying that one dislikes the sunshine, the birds, the flowers, the kindness and sweetness of those who have offered us their love and friendship. I would be mad enough to commit murder. On reading that letter, if that feeling were not overshadowed by amazement that any girl could have written it. Jane Reed, Atlanta, Georgia.
Yesterday, I read an item in a photoplay magazine in which it stated that two more stars in the Hollywood firmament have bobbed their hair. In a sense, these women belong to the public. And it is not conventional and is an offense against the traditions of this country and good taste. The women, and the men too, of the screen are held up to the youth of this country every day. And when they see Constance Talmadge get by with bobbed hair and a divorce after she has been married scarcely a year, they feel, well, if she can do it, why cannot I? You see how far-reaching and insidious is the influence. Anna Fraser, Cincinnati, Ohio. And that is old-timey movie magazine Letters to the Editor Theater. Kat Edmondson, Christina Baldwin, and me performing those. I would like to take a moment to share with you some of my beliefs. I believe that songs of the 1970s used the word boogie so much that it was over-harvested, and that's why we've been in a musical boogie drought ever since. I believe Willie Nelson was right when he advised mamas to not let their babies grow up to be cowboys. A life spent as half cow and half boy should be no one's goal. I believe the best reggae dancehall music with surprising, if not entirely justified, plot twists is provided by M. Night Shyamalan. I didn't expect that one to go big. I believe the E in Chuck E. Cheese stands for evil. Full name, Charles Evil Cheese. I believe Boo Radley is not just a character in To Kill a Mockingbird, but an instruction to skateboarding ghosts. I believe forgiveness is difficult, but lugging spite around forever is more difficult. I believe that the feeling of having finished exercising is the best part about exercising. And makes the exercising part worth it, barely. This also applies to middle school. I believe giving kids trophies for participating is just fine because maybe it will lead to those kids growing up to be the kind of adults who aren't always complaining about kids getting participation trophies. I believe that because my psychiatrist is retiring, I won. And I believe that it's not important what I do in my career. What's important is my family and what they can do to help my career. I believe the best name for a dog is Grandpa. And I believe that on the days he was sick, Bob Barker stayed home from The Price is Right and watched you go to school. More with Kat Edmondson and actor Carrie Elwes in just a moment. This is Wits. I'm John Moe. This is Wits. I'm John Moe, here with singer Kat Edmondson and actor and author Carrie Elwes.
Hello, everybody. My name's Bob Seger. How y'all doing tonight? I said, how y'all doing? I can't hear. Can't actually hear you because I'm trapped inside a whale. I have been for months now, but I've been keeping busy. See, I've rewritten a lot of my old hits and made them about my new life in a whale.
I was on the sea looking for some good trout. My safety aboard wasn't in doubt. Till the great big wave tossed me right over a whale. That's when I was swallowed by a great big whale. Ooh, a big ferocious whale.
Been inside it ever since.
Funny how the whale moves. I guess he's got nothing to lose. I fall down when the whale moves.
That was my song, Night Moves. Rewritten. It's just one of the tracks on my new cassette, Bob Seger, Trapped in a Whale. A cassette you can buy for yourself.
I'm Bob Seger. I'm trapped inside a whale. My bed's made of blubber. My life is getting stale. Sometimes I go for walks back there to the tail. Yeah, I'm a whale.
It's like a rock, but also like a whale. I've worked hard on these songs, but you know I couldn't have done it all without my friend Kenny Loggins. That's what I call the hand puppet that I made out of calcified plankton deposits. Kenny Loggins. We wrote a lot of these songs together. I have gone insane. It's a condition they call blubber madness.
We got tonight.
You and me, Kenny Loggins, puppet.
Every night also. We're trapped in this whale here. I guess we have to stay.
So how do you get your copy of Bob Seger Trapped in a Whale? Well, just send $10 to Bob Seger. Address, a whale. The ocean. No checks, I need cash. I'm trying to save up for some tools I can smash myself out with. Then I'm getting out of here.
Just take my smashing tools in my hand. I'll keep on smashing till I reach the land. Maybe I can climb out through the blowhole. I like that old time rock and roll.
I couldn't think of anything that rhymed with blowhole. Now, there may be some problems with my plan. I don't know if I really can receive or send letters or packages from inside a whale. And the equipment I have for duplicating cassettes may, in fact, be whale guts. There's that old blubber madness acting up again.
Against the whale. We were plotting against that whale. We're a little older now, but still plotting against the whale.
But your old pal Bob ain't gonna give up.
Against the whale.
Because I love my fans.
Against the whale.
I mean, eventually I'll have to give up, obviously.
Working and practicing against the whale.
There's only so much I can do as one man.
Against the whale.
I think the whale likes the songs. It's hard to judge.
Against the whale.
Cause on account of he's a whale.
Against the whale.
Sincerely, Bob Seger.
John Munson as Bob Seger, The Witnesses as the Silver Bullet Band. Support for WITS comes from the designers of the Canadian flag. Hey, let's put a leaf on there and just go home. Additional support provided by oatmeal, the breakfast that's a liquid, a solid, and a disappointment. Additional support provided by Lawns, the water-sucking, high-maintenance way to attract dog poo. And now, the WITS Game Show. Carrie Elwes, your book, As You Wish, is filled with stories of life behind the scenes of The Princess Bride. Kat, your music has been used in major motion pictures. This makes you both experts on all things Hollywood. Huh. In this game, I'm going to share with you a famous Hollywood behind-the-scenes story. It's up to the two of you to confer with one another and tell me if it's real or one that we just made up. Are you ready? It doesn't matter. Here we go. True or false, after failing to become upset enough during a pivotal scene on the set of the 1930s film Skippy, child star Jackie Cooper had his dog taken away from him and was then told the dog was shot.
What?
It might sound mean, but Cooper was nominated for an Academy Award. Is this something that would have happened in the 1930s?
Yeah. It sounds incredibly cruel. But it sounds like something that
would happen in Hollywood. Yeah, yeah. That is, in fact, something that happened in Hollywood.
That's
that is true.
That's a director that had to go home and
think about
his life and how he helped that actor get to that point in his career.
In order to tap into the inner turmoil of John Adams, a man who never allowed himself a moment's joy, actor Paul Giamatti would often confine himself to the far corner of the craft services area and eat cake all by himself. True or false?
This is irrelevant, but I just saw him in a grocery store recently.
Really?
Was he eating cake?
I was, you know, I just wondered.
Yeah.
And he, I think he did, because I was looking in his basket. I would say yes.
It sounds about right.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect.
Oh.
Rocky IV is considered to be the greatest boxing movie ever, of course. But there was a price to be paid for perfection. Sylvester Stallone wanted all the boxing scenes in the movie to be as realistic as possible, so he encouraged gigantic Russian man Dolph Lundgren to actually punch him during the fight scenes. Stallone had to go to the hospital with a swollen pericardial sac, which could have led to a heart attack.
You swelled up my pericardial sac. Go ahead, Dolph. Go ahead. It's okay. Go ahead.
This is the method way of working through a trivia question.
Go ahead. You can hit me in the scene. You know what? You can hit me in the scene. Just stay away from my pericardial sac.
Yeah, that's about all I got, too.
So we're saying?
No.
No.
I'm sorry. That did actually happen.
Wow. Impressive.
Brad Pitt might be the king of terrifying pranks. According to Pitt, he and director David Fincher held a New Year's Eve party at a remote Mexican resort with the sole purpose of convincing guests that the Y2K crisis had sent the world into total chaos. They bribed Mexican government officials to cut power to the resort. Then, to make sure everyone was fully terrified, they had government troops raid the party and arrest one of the party guests on drug charges.
What do you think?
We're gauging how mean Brad Pitt might be here.
All right, let's hear the yeses.
Yes!
And let's hear the noes.
No!
Sounds like a yay there. All the yays.
Brad Pitt is that mean of a person.
Whoa!
That is true. On the set of The Wizard of Oz...
are you getting your information?
Yeah, really.
This one was from a Brad Pitt interview on Charlie Rose. So at least it's a true story that Brad Pitt has made this claim. On the set of The Wizard of Oz, the Tin Man, played by Jack Haley, convinced Burt Lahr's makeup person to administer small electrical shocks to to the Cowardly Lion during his hair sessions. It's a lot of hair.
A lot of cruel people making movies back in the 40s.
Yes, there were.
In the 40s.
Yes, it's a rough time.
It's a rough time. What do you think, Kat?
I'm wondering why.
Carrie, could you shed some insight as to why actors would be cruel to each other with pranks on a set?
I put a goat in Charlie Sheen's trailer one time. He deserved it.
Was this during Hot Shots?
I filmed it. It was great. During Hot Shots, I filmed it. He opened the trailer and went, "What the heck is that? Open a goat in my trailer." What? So, yeah, thank you. Thank you. That wasn't the only thing he had in his trailer, I can tell you.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm kidding.
Oh, boy. So, true or false?
There are other goats in there.
Jack Haley, electrical shocks,
Burt
Lahr.
What do you think, yays or nays? Good, let's hear the yays. No? 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 No. That's a unanimous...
Well, they're all wrong. It truly happened
during
the filming of The Wizard of Oz. Final question. ALF, we all know, was the greatest sitcom to come out of the 1980s.
Yes.
However, it was a difficult and dangerous show to shoot because ALF was a puppet. The stage floor was filled with trap doors so ALF could appear anywhere. And essentially, the set became a death trap for human non-puppets.
That sounds about right, doesn't it?
That is absolutely true. Correct. Congratulations, Carrie Elwes and Kat Edmondson. Nice work. Once again, old-timey movie magazine letters to the editor theater, actual letters from actual jerks who have probably been dead for a very long time.
Please publish lots of pictures of Norma Talmadge, as I am making a scrapbook of her magazine pictures. I already have 134 of these pasted in my book. I suppose from my letter so far, you think I never look at any other star. This is wrong. But I think none can compare with Miss Talmadge. Evelyn Murray, 3024 Parkwood Avenue, Toledo, Ohio.
From the various comments around me, I think I am the only person in the whole country who doesn't like Mae West. To me, her pictures are the most disgusting display of vulgarity I have ever seen. And as far as I'm concerned, vulgarity can never be condoned. Having just heard some youngsters outside talking a la Mae West, I became so angry I wanted to break things. Jane Doe, Los Angeles, California.
Mae West is an actress and a great one. Mae West is giving the public what it wants, whether it be a disgusting display of vulgarity or not. Incidentally, Jane, do you know any vulgar people? They're really quite refreshing.
And that is Old Time Movie Magazine Letters to the Editor Theater. Kat Edmondson, Christina Baldwin, and me performing those. Once again, Kat Edmondson.
Can't you find a reason not to end it all? I've been coming up with ways to break your fall. Now that I'm around, I'll be sure you don't touch the ground. Didn't you have Dallas eating from your hand? Looking like a lady standing in the sand. What was on your mind? What were you doing there killing time? I don't know where you go whenever you leave, but you're happy. Independence Day.
try to find you. Oh, but I don't know where you go. Whenever you leave, but you're happier there. I've got to believe.
Cat Edmondson with John Munson and the Witnesses. Want more Wits in your life? Go to witsradio.org and check out our archives. We've got some really great shows to listen to with guests like Keegan-Michael Key, Maria Bamford, Paul F. Tompkins, Brandi Carlile, OK Go, Patton Oswalt, Harmar Superstar, lots more. You can also sign up to receive the Wits newsletter and hear what past Wits guests are up to, find past and future shows, or, you know what, tell us what you're up to on Twitter. We're at Wits. Thanks to our friends Carrie Elwes and Kat Edmondson. Thanks also to our technical director, Corey Schreppel, our coordinating producer, Hans Buto, our intern, Autumn Burgraff, Ali Lozoff, and the staff at the Fitzgerald Theater, Tom Campbell, Alan Freckman, Aaron Cossio, and Maury Jensen. This episode of Wits was written by me and Mike Fotis. Our acting company included Christina Baldwin. Thanks to music director John Munson and the Witnesses, Joe Savage, Steve Rome, and JT Bates. Our executive producer is Peter Clowney. Our senior producer is Larissa Anderson. I'm John Moe. Bye now. We want to thank the Bryant Lake Bowl in Minneapolis for sponsoring some of our WITS social club activities. Bryant Lake Bowl is celebrating over 20 years of perfect scores, ugly shoes, first dates, and foodie fantasies. It's always more awesome when bowling balls are involved.